Welcome, everyone, to Keep Hope Alive, starring yours truly, Tony DeRillis. This podcast is about a genuine, authentic experience about a young man navigating the foster care system and making it to the other side, defying statistics. This podcast covers former and current foster youth, not just in New York City, but across the country. Tony shares all of what's happening in foster care to uplift and empower foster youth, foster parents, agency staff, and social workers. Keep hope alive. Until next time.
I bet.
You're live, baby.
Oop, there we go. Yo, 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 here's the part two, the part two of the part two of me and Aaron's conversation. And yeah, I just, thanks for vibing out with us, man. Like, it's, I know the last thing we kind of were going over was just like the impact of having to, just navigating difficult conversations with people who just say the wrong thing about youth in the system. Like, and I was just kind of talking, like, I was just talking a little bit about how sometimes I don't want to use my emotional labor to kind of talk about how they give me pity parties, right? And they're just like, oh, I'm so sorry that you had to go in care, and just kind of like navigating some of that. That's kind of where we left off at. But I know you had a few other things that you wanted to kind of touch base on as the conversation kind of goes on.
Yeah. So hi, everybody. Again, my name is Darren, but everybody calls me D. So I'll jump right in. So we're talking about the things people say that may not be the most
appropriate
or conscionable things to someone who experienced being in foster care. Now, don't get me wrong. We're not saying don't have empathy or don't be empathetic or don't have sympathy, but it's okay when it's genuine. It's not okay when it's scripted or when it's just so you can just get to the, you know, get to the quote unquote resolution faster, mm-hmm. Right? So it's okay to it's okay to feel bad because it's human. It's human to be empathetic towards a situation that somebody's going through that's unfortunate. It's, you know, and to have sympathy for them and even to maybe even pity them. Yes. I've pitied people as bad as some of the stuff that I've done or dealt with in life. I still have the capacity to feel like bad for somebody who goes through something that's probably not as bad as what I went through. But still, it's very unfortunate. So it's okay when it's genuine. It's not okay when it's used to, as a weapon or to dehumanize or to make someone feel less than, you know, that's not okay. But I don't think that's okay in any arena, but in foster care, yeah, it sucks. And people will do it. They will do it unapologetically. I feel like Mayweather right now, just tripping over my room. Some of these words is tearing me up.
Oh, Mayweather.
Some of these words are tearing me up. Okay.
But blame it.
Yeah. So yeah. So that's all I have to say on that topic as far as what not to say to a child in care. I mean, I feel like what would you not want someone to say to you had you been in that person's predicament?
Right. Because I feel like there's nothing wrong with sympathy or empathizing with someone's situation. I think for me, it's just more of a matter of the way it's conveyed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry this happened to you, or like, where's your parents? And it just kind of comes off as like almost condescending, and
they're just trying to be nosy,
right? And it's not really coming from like a place of good intention, right? So that for me is when it kind of gets a little murky, because I'm just like, yo, I'm really like just trying to share my story, and I feel like you're minimizing my experience, right? And that's what I mean when like I don't want to use my emotional labor to like to have to unpack.
There's power in your story. There's power in your story, and I think when you say that, that's you know that there's power in this story. There's, you know, and you don't want to take it for granted, or you don't want anyone else to take that for granted. And yeah, just as you know, what I realized, like, even though some stories are very misfortunate and really bad, it's still like valuable stories. There's still value in it, like a lot of value in it, as a matter of fact, because you really learn some, you know, interesting things about the world and people, or you know, and you know, it's crazy. Like, I have to say, not all of it was bad, and when I look at the bigger picture, it was good.
That's interesting. Let's let that marinate too, right? Because I do think that for the most part, the narrative in foster care is like, yo, it sucks. This is what happened.
This dark, gloomy cloud.
I'm not gonna minimize it. Like, some of it really does suck.
Gloomy cloud and dark clouds and thunder and rain.
Right. Doom and gloom.
Just a bunch of wet cats.
There's definitely a lot of that. There's also success stories. There's also people that have triumphed, that have taken ownership of their story, have went out across like thousands of people and like just told it, right? But I'm curious, like, what parts of it, because I know for me, there's some good parts of it as well, where like, you know, scholarships, right? Like, scholarships are plenty.
Listen. Oh. When you start to get a taste of that money them foster mothers is getting, you like, yeah, I see why they act. Oh, God, please forgive me. But I'm joking. I really am joking. But when you start to see the money flow in all of this, you're like, wow, I see these people really do. I mean, maybe you start to empathize with them as to why they do or operate in the way in which they do, right? Mm-hmm. When you start to see the money flow, I mean, not to say it's all about the money, but realistically, like, you know, it is, as far because these people they have to keep these programs funded to keep them going, right? They have to continue to provide stipends and reimbursements and you know, for people, for these services to keep going, right? In a sense. So you kind of like, yeah, I see why. They have a lot to protect. And sometimes it is bigger than that. You know, people have families that they want to provide for. They have families that they want to be better and stuff like that. So you kind of, it's like, you can't blame them for being selfish, I guess, right? In that way. But there are some good sides for those of us who have gone through it, right? Benefits like having your education paid for, having your driver's license paid, having those items, I guess, that if you had parents and they didn't have the money to pay for it, you just wasn't getting it. And I know a lot of dudes out there, girls, got, you know, young people, old people who still have a hard time holding on to a government ID.
Yeah.
You know, like, but in our case, that's something that would probably be expected to be provided for us. An education. If your parents can't afford education, you have, I think, maybe one of three options. Take out loans. Don't go to college. Or work and go to college, which is tough.
Yeah, I mean, there are scholarships out there.
Yeah, there are scholarships.
It's just that you got to
work your butt off for it. Thankfully for us, we are a part of a network. There's some value in that, and being a foster, you're part of a network, right? That can connect you to these resources. That if operated like full throttle, like everybody gives their best at it, you can have a lot of resources. Like you'll be covered basically. Like that's the upside of being to me and being in foster care. The Medicaid, you have Medicare up until you're 26, which we may not realize, but Medicare is a crisis for people to have their basic, you know, I guess health needs or physical health needs met, on top of the fact that they may live in a low income community. They may not have the best food, you know, fresh foods provided for them. So that is pushed, not really helping them stay healthy so that they don't have to go to, you know, things like that. And then long-term healthcare, that kind of thing. You know, we have that. We don't have to worry about that until we're 26. And then we don't have to worry about staying at a job because of that. Because we need the healthcare package. We need the benefits and stuff like that. So I think that's an upside to being in foster care now that I'm older. You know, hindsight is 2020. There are a lot more things that I wish I took advantage of. There are a lot more things I wish there are a lot more. I have a lot of those moments where it's like, dang, if I knew then what I knew now, how much further I would be, you know?
That's interesting. I think for me, some of the good stuff that kind of came out of foster care too, just like the first few that kind of come to the top of my mind is a passport, right? Like
a passport.
I know for damn sure, yo, if I was not in foster care, I know for damn sure I would never have a passport.
So I'm saying. Never.
I would have been like, what is that? How do you get it? Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Now,
no, I mean, people that don't have a passport.
Pretty much go internationally, and I don't have to, well, you know, COVID-19. But outside of that, right, when the vaccines do come and things kind of stabilize, yeah, international travel will be back to where.
And then you can expose yourself. If you play your cards right, my takeaway from, like, dealing with ADP, that's the only program I'm going to call out by name, because shout out to them, ADP program. They doing their best at Hoshea St. Vincent's. But my takeaway from programs, like, if you really play your cards right and you – it's a lot of moving parts to it. But if you play your cards right, you can walk out of foster care like a child who's coming from an upper middle class family. And what do I mean by that? I mean economically. I don't know about socioeconomically, but definitely economically. Like, if you play your cards right, if you save your allowances, let's say you live in a foster home and you're going to college and you still get allowance and you still get those stipends, and then you get your Metro card, you get your meal plan that's paid for at school, and you save your money. You don't go buying frivolous things like Yeezys and all that craziness. And you save all of that for all 4 years. You save the refund checks. You save the ETV book allowances and, you know, those checks that you get every semester or every month of the semester. If you save all of that, especially if you were, because when I was going away to school, they were giving you $800 stipends. $800 stipends every month. That's $1,600. Yo, if you save that for 4 months, 8 times 4, 3,200. Is that, am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Forgive me, y'all. I'm working on the math. But, and you save the refund checks. When I was in college, I got, and I'm telling on myself. I'm use myself as an example. Please learn from this. When I was in college, refund checks was no less than $1,000. And I got a refund check every semester. For the most part, I got a refund check every semester. On top of the fact that I was working full time and I was able to, I don't want to incriminate myself at this point. Let me just slow down a little bit. My point is that if you save those checks, all of that money that you're getting, because you're not paying for anything, your school, your tuition is paid for, your housing is paid for, whether you live on campus, off campus, or in a foster home, or in a dorm project, or whatever, whatever. You save all of that stuff, you can walk out with an easy 40 grand. Okay, maybe I'm okay. Let me, 15 grand. Let me lower the bar. Because when I did the math on myself, I could have walked away with at least 40 grand.
Hey, listen, I want to meet someone who was able to age out with that much money? Because
some of them, so let me tell you something. Shout out to the ones that are. Exactly. I know they're out there.
We got to get them.
Shout out to them. They're out there.
Oh my gosh. Yo, I aged out with like maybe 500, but I don't know. I was kind of reckless with my money. But
let me see. I don't think I aged out with a dollar.
You said what?
I had a job. So I had a paycheck to look forward to, but I don't know if at the time when I signed papers and you know took keys, I don't think I had I really don't remember, but honestly, I don't think I even had $1,000 put away.
Damn.
So and here's what I'm saying. If you play your cards right, like if looking back, if I would have did it properly. Once you left fourth, you know, college and I saved all of that money, let's say I saved 15 grand. When you come back, it's not like they're saying, okay, yeah, to hell with you, out the door. No, I went back into a foster home, or I had the option of going into a foster home, supportive housing, or waiting for a NYCHA apartment, or, you know, to call back, or some other form of housing. Maybe you did a private apartment, who knows? Or maybe you did affordable housing. Maybe you got called back for affordable housing apartment. Either way, they don't just put you out. They at least give you, even though it's not a lot, but they still give you that furniture grant or that house, that discharge grant. So right. Add that on top of all of the money that you saved from undergrad and possibly grad school. Because honestly, if I knew then what I knew now, I would have stood in the foster home that I was in my entire time while I was in school. I would have never went away to campus. I would have never moved off campus and tried to get my own. Like, I would have never been trying to be grown. And I mean, I did it, but I would have never moved off campus and got my own place, because then there were other like expenses that came along with that. Like as far as buying food, and I didn't know food was expensive, and I couldn't apply for food stamps. Yeah, they were going to deny me full fact. So I didn't have to worry about anything. I didn't have to worry about Medicare. I didn't have to worry about food. I didn't have to worry about transportation. I didn't have to worry about tuition.
That's a lot of stressors that's out the window, right?
Out the window. Like, don't get me wrong. You went through a lot of crap just yesterday. But today, here comes fairy godmother, you know, on her horse. And things are looking up. And I think, unfortunately, that time for me, I did a lot of unpacking emotionally, mentally. I was doing a lot of unpacking as well as trying to make sure that I make something of this opportunity that has been handed to me. Because legit, for a long time, I think I suffered from survivor's guilt. Like, I just got through going through mad crap just yesterday. I was dealing with people who irritate my soul and just trying to keep my mind right, trying not to go insane, trying not to let these people have more control over my life than they need to, right? And I didn't make the best financial decisions. I'm not saying I went bankrupt or anything, but I wasn't buying things that were of any value. Or using the money in a way of where it could build itself, right? I could have invested some of that money and put it into a CD account and let it grow interest that way. I could have reached out to my stepbrother who I mentioned earlier. I could have reached out to him a lot earlier and asked him, what does he know about investing and saving and you know, growing interest on, you know, things like that. But instead I said, well, finally, a point in my life where I have my own money on a consistent basis. And I can buy the things that I always wanted. That was a big mistake. Trying to make up for that time, you know, for those things that I didn't. That was a big mistake, because in retrospect, none of that stuff mattered.
I'm pretty sure there was a reason why you wanted to.
Of course, that. You're trying to fill a void. You're trying to fill a void.
Yeah, I mean,
I can afford the wig, the nice wigs. You know, at that time, wigs and makeup was starting to become a huge thing. I could afford the nice clothes. I can afford a genuine leather jacket, maybe. A nice warm coat for the winter. I can afford that thing. I can look nice now. You know, I could be presentable. I think for a long time, maybe because some of the stuff that people told me when I was a kid and I internalized it as I got older. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do think it has benefited me because it taught me how to be a part of a community or many communities. For that matter, But yeah, like I was spending that money on stupid stuff. I saved some of it though. I did. But I spent a lot more than I saved. And that was not the smartest thing to do, because coming out of foster care, you have to realize you are not the same 22, 23, or 4 year old as your friends or peers. You are head of household.
That's facts.
And you know what? The better advantage that you take of that jump start that you get, that head start that you get, as far as not having to pay for all those things out of pocket and be the sole responsible person for making sure those things get paid, take advantage, dude. Like, the better you will wound up, the better you will come out, the more on top you will come out, the more you will be ready. You have a head start. You have this amount of money, the amount of money you can put down on a house, the amount of money you can put down on a condo. You don't have to take their options of a NYCHA apartment or of affordable housing apartment and then become a part of that low income spin wheel, where it's like you're paying so much money in rent and you don't even own it. You're paying someone else's mortgage. And then you have that time to grow that knowledge as far as, you know, financial literacy and stuff like that. So but also you have to want it. You have to seek it. You have to seek it out. You have to want it for yourself. You have to believe that you deserve it. You have to believe that, you know, you will make it happen. You have to have faith in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. That first and foremost. So, yeah, I wish that I would have took better advantage of that part of it. But I still did. I graduated. I got my degree. I learned a lot about the real world. I got out of my little microcosm here in Brooklyn.
Hey, what's going on, man? Hey, yo, it's been a while since we talked. Definitely got to chop it up with you, bro. Be dumb boogie. Yo, one thing that I wanted to kind of touch base on, though, because I know that in the beginning it was mostly about good things, right, that you kind of got out of the foster care system. And then also you kind of transitioned a little bit into, like, saving money, right, as a life lesson, but also setting boundaries and amongst other things in the previous episode. What would you say are, like, three life lessons off the top of your head that, like, yo, I can't believe, like, without these life lessons, I couldn't have possibly navigated foster care. And like for the young people who feel lost, who don't have, yo, I don't know what's going on right here. Did she just leave? Hello?
Again, I'm sorry. Jesus, forgive me.
Yo,
disconnect Wi-Fi. Yo, let me tell you, Optimum is trash. Optimum is trash. They have the nerve to operate like a monopoly. Like, sorry.
You know, it's funny you say that though, because I always get a mail from them, and I'm just like, I don't want it. Yo, no, I'll take it. They are persistent too. They will. Yo, I think every other day I literally get mail from them. No lie.
Yo, don't. And then you can't get no one on the phone. Everybody's blaming high call volumes on COVID pandemic. They're full of it. But Optimum is trash, man. They have a class action suit going on down in Connecticut. They're trash. We need to go after them in New York too, because they are trash.
That's crazy.
But we're back.
Yeah, I was saying, like, what are good life lessons that you learned that you couldn't have otherwise gotten, you know, navigating the foster care system? Like, what did that look like?
Well,
outside of, like, setting boundaries, saving money, investing, you know, having a budget.
Just save the money. There's sometimes when you're going to get money and you just want to do something with it, but just, it's better to hold on to it until you gain some type of wisdom or some sort of mentor or somebody, like, I'm sorry, I'm reading the comments.
No, go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, it's just better to hold on to it until you better understand how to use it before you misuse it. It's better to just wait before you misuse it or misuse that opportunity. I think that goes for not just money, but most things in life. But yeah. Other things? Can you give me some examples? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, of course. Like some things, for instance, for me, right? Being able to know my authentic self, right? So like, before you mentioned like having to switch code, right? Like there are sometimes I only presented that side of me to you because that's the kind of energy you gave me, right? Now that I'm outside of that environment, I could be my authentic self. I don't have to have these two masks that I'm putting on at once, right? Another lesson that I learned personally has been seeking out resources, like taking initiative, right? So like for me, I always was a pretty good person in terms of like being cordial with people and being nice, mm-hmm. but I didn't know how to take initiative, right? I would always just like fade into the background mm-hmm. and like I wouldn't say anything. It wasn't until I started advocating for myself and really like, yo, I need these resources. I need the link to this scholarship. I need you to help me out with like financial aid. I need help with budgeting my money. Mm-hmm. Once I learned how to advocate for myself, that's when like things just, I continue to do that to this day. That's something that has just been with me since I was 17 years old now. And you know, that was life changing for me. Like even something what I consider to be small was like maintaining relationships with people. Like I didn't value relationships at all. Like for me, I was just like, people can come and go out of my life. I don't care. Right. I only acted that way because that's just the environment I grew up in, right? Like people just came and went out of my life. So I didn't know who was going to stay. So for me, I have a very detached, I don't even know how you call it. I'm very, like, sometimes I can be very detached, right, in general. During the pandemic, I learned how to, like, really value relationships because all of us were isolated. So, like, I was like, yo, I need to reach out to people. I need to be more proactive. I need to be more, like, I really do value this person. So, there's a lot of times where, like, just life lessons I took that, you know, I feel really took me far to where I am right now. And it's still a work in progress. Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. I'm going through that point where you talk about people could come and kind of go. I'm there right now. I still have people that I'm like really cool with and stuff. And who I value our relationships, but as far as me continuously sewing into a relationship, friendship, you know, that kind of thing, I have my days, you know. But for right now, I'm kind of reassessing certain things, like the relationships I already have, and do I really value those? Do those relationships really are they any value to me? Because I do realize, growing up, sometimes I befriended not the best people or not like people who were really friends, and not that they intentionally were that way, but some people, you know, when you grow up in a certain environment where everybody's in survival mode, mm-hmm. at some point people are really going to be forced to only think about themselves, and you cannot yeah. feel bad for that. But I am a very sensitive person, because I know that even though I would be in a struggling position, I would still try to reach a hand out and help. Not everybody's like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but yeah, I'm kind of there right now, but that's neither here nor there. Back to the question at hand. You asked
that's actually a good point though, because like I do often feel like, damn, like, I think for me, I kind of struggle with identifying who's going to rock with me and who's going to like just come in and out of my life.
Yeah.
Because for me, like, I want to be close to people and I want to like have those close relationships, but let me calm down. But there's just some people that like, I just can't rock with them, you know, like no matter what, it's just like, you show me that side of you that I'm not really feeling, and like I just got to get away from that toxic energy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like it comes and goes. Like there's some days where I'm just isolated in my bed, and I'm just like, I'm okay the way it is. Other times I want to reach out, I want to talk to people, you know, but not everyone is meant for not everyone is meant for you, you know. So
yeah,
that's my friend Daquan.
That's normal. To me, that's normal for what we may have gone through. I'm not saying everybody's story is the same, but you kind of go through the same nuances in a way as far as relationships with people. People, you have the people who build relationships with you by haphazardly. Some people who do it intentionally because they need to, i.e. the professionals we work with. And then you have, you know, the people that you just probably shouldn't, but haven't. You just happen, you know, I don't know. That's normal. And I'm pretty sure there's some science dictionary somewhere that'll have a term for that and a list of reasons why. Right? But something that helped me was staying true to myself. Like, just, you gotta love the skin you in. Cause there were times when I was younger, just by like, I would have these idols. Cause I always wanted to. And what I realized is that it's not that there was much to idolize. It was just the fact that they had what I didn't. They had the support. They had someone who cared about them, someone who took pride in them. So that could be anybody, right? And I had to learn that was not the way to go. Like trying to fit in all the time. Mm. Because you're an individual. You have an individual life. You have a very unique life. And it's just not never going to be like that. So I think that was something that helped me a lot. Is just learning to accept me for me. Mm. And that took a lot. It took a lot. Took a lot of time because as a young person you go through a lot of different transitions, not just being in foster care but also going from elementary school to middle school, going from, you know, being a preteen to a whole teenager and then to almost an adult to now having to be an adult. And I just noticed even that now as grown, just because I was in foster care don't mean that, oh, something was automatically wrong with me. I see some people who grew up in regular homes, two-parent homes, that just, like, you would have thought.
I've had friends, they had two-parent homes, and their life was just as bad as mine, you know, so.
Right.
It definitely doesn't.
They had it good, and they just turned out to be something crazy. Like, I digress. Right. But yeah, that's something that helped me. Being coachable, open to learning, opening to learn new things, and seeking out the unknown and certain, I guess, like growing up, I always used to like do this thing where like I would go to a really, really nice neighborhood and I just walk around just to see what the nice side of life or town looks like, right? Like, what's this?
That's where I used to do the same thing.
Yeah. You gotta be open to seeing new things. And I think that's a good thing about foster care because you kind of in a way get out there because I live in three different boroughs, mad different neighborhoods. So it's like, I've seen a lot of Brooklyn. I've seen a lot of Queens. I've seen Staten Island, Manhattan, the Bronx. So I don't feel like just any tip, like some people just been in Brooklyn their whole life. So being open to like seeing new things, new experiences, and you have to be in a foster care because shoot, you're getting moved to a new home, new setting all the time. So you have to kind of be like, and at some point it catches up to you. It's like, all right, a new place. Cool. What this have in store? What does this have in store? What can I make out of this? You know? So that's something that helped. Right. And I'll leave that there.
Okay.
But
do you feel like sometimes, because I had an interesting topic discussion where a friend of mine's, Desiree, she brought up that like sometimes we hold on to our pain so much, and that's like that becomes a part of our identity, right?
Yeah.
Like even for me, like, and she also noted that like a lot of former alumni, we tend to always have busy schedules. We want to stay busy. We always have something going on in our lives, and we might even be using that as a way to kind of, not always, but might be a way to kind of escape the pain, right? Or to escape, damn, like this was a lot going on for me. Like, I don't.
To distract yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like, what have been like in terms, do you feel like, just like your story as a whole, because I know you identify with it strongly, but do you feel like that's been a part of your being as a whole? And like, if not, how have you been able to detach from that?
I think I hold on more to what I went through now than I did when I was actually going through it. I was just like on a constant, like, get over it, because ain't nothing going to happen about it. You're not going to get no sort of recourse. Nothing's going to happen to them. You just got to get over it. Because if you don't, it's going to eat you up. It's going to, you know? Sometimes now I feel like, yeah, thinking about it, like, yeah, like that was something that I noticed like over the last few years. Like, I just sometimes I don't want to think about it, but it just comes up. And I'm just like, all right, obviously, this means I just have to process it and, you know, come to terms with it. What helped me detach from it and not let it identify me was seeing what it did to the people that held on and let it be them, their identity, seeing what happened to them, learning from their mistake of not letting certain things go. Like, I know it's hard because it's like, it's very challenging. Like, when somebody do something to you, your natural reaction is to do something back, avenge, you know, what happened or what, you know, but I had to learn like that not everything you're going to be able to, you know, avenge you, not everything you're going to get an answer for, not everything you're going to get an apology for. A lot of things you're not going to get an apology for. And then also not making the good things that happen to you pay for that. You know what I'm saying? Like self-sabotaging or sabotaging a good opportunity or burning a bridge with somebody or, you know, taking disadvantage of someone who wasn't like you. That takes a lot to like come from getting a whole bunch of bad foster mothers or like bad, you know, dealing with bad people, and then you get to somebody good and then you don't recognize that fast enough, or you don't recognize it at all, and then you burn that bridge because then that karma comes back around. Whatever you made that person go through, you're gonna go through. And then like that, like that's what kind of like helped me I guess not let it identify me, is watching like what it did to the people who did let it identify them, and watching how they like watching what it does to them, because there's still like we was going to talk about some of the things that are the things that are being done to bring attention to children and care and what they need. Like how it, you know, like if you, hopefully you catch my drift in that, like what it does to people who hold on to it. So, and then also to realize that it's not just me. And then I know that sounds kind of bad because it's like, oh, good, somebody else is going to do shit too. No, but more so like somebody else has gone through worse. And not have been in my situation and could have been at the hands of the person who was supposed to take care of them, you know, that kind of thing. That helped me detach from it too, like not letting foster care define me, because the things that happen to you in foster care don't only happen to you, in foster care. It can happen at a more frequently or more easily to you, but it's not, it happens to children everywhere. And sometimes it's worse because they don't ever get even recognized. Like, you know, when you think about it, like history and stuff, some people went to their grave and was abused by their dad, stepdad, whoever, and mom was an alcoholic, or mom had a mental health issue, or dad, you know, like some people took that to the grave. They were never rescued, or it was never acknowledged. That's just something that the family, you know, did, and it died out with them. That helped me also, like, looking at it that way also helped me detach from it. But yeah, like not wanting to make myself pay over again, because it's like you go through it, but you don't have to put yourself through it. And sometimes I see people who've come out of it, like people who are even in foster care or come out of foster care, and it's like you see them do these things, and it's like, don't you want peace in your life at some point? Do you want to constantly be going through stuff? Like that's how, that, like, though, when you see that, it's like, yeah, they holding on to that, like they're letting that, like, mm-hmm. But there's a chemistry behind it too, you know, like as far as when, like, there's a chemistry to it when you're so used to, like, when your body's so used to producing cortisol,
yeah,
not enough serotonin to balance it out and dopamine to balance it out. It's like, that's your unconditioned reaction now, because it's like you're so used to being in an environment or in a situation where you're in a fight or flight response. Now it's just something that you do it subconsciously.
It's that survival.
Yeah. So
like you're just not sure how to approach the situation, and then it's like, oh crap.
Yeah, but we gotta keep it real. Like I don't let foster care. I don't think we thought out to let foster care define us. I damn sure don't let foster care define me, because I feel like maybe I just got a chance at life that a lot of other people didn't. So going back to what I said before, like you don't choose your parents, and a lot of people out there can't choose their parents, and they grow up with these people for their entire life, and so they're being conditioned by these people their entire life. I've gotten to experience I've gotten exposed to so many different ways of living and life and, you know, culture and just so many like things, and that has given me so much wisdom that I wouldn't have gotten had I was raised by my mother or raised with my dad. And knowing what I know, I cannot confidently say that I would be who I am today had I been raised by my parents.
Mm. Oh, I definitely have those same sentiments too, right? Because I know for me, like, I was in fear when I was living with my mom. Like,
mm-hmm.
It felt like a prison. It felt like, you know, if this person loves me so much, why does it hurt so bad? You know, mm-hmm. And that's kind of like, that's always been my feelings towards that situation. And like, I just think back to like how I was so timid and frantic, and I just didn't really know how to talk, like, you know, and that's because I was in such a submissive position where, like, shut up, don't say anything, like, if no one can love you like I can, right? And it was just like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, after hearing all these remarks and statements, it kind of, like, just embedded in my mind, like, oh, okay, maybe she's right, like, she's my mom, she knows better. It didn't get into a point where, like, once I got out of that environment and I started going into the foster care system, yes, it was even more trauma, but it also helped me to get out of my immediate situation because it was so toxic. I was just like, oh, thank God. Like, I don't want to say around the same people, but at least my life didn't feel like it was in danger. And from there, I was able to pick up on more safer methods, right? And eventually, as much crap as I give my aunt, only because she's family and because I have such a high expectation, but I will say that it's only thanks to my aunt and living with her and my family as a whole, there was no better alternative. It had to be them, right? Like, it had to be my grandparents. It had to be my aunt. It had to be my cousins. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be in the position where I would have felt safe and comfortable, as opposed to practically anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when I was in the residential treatment facility, the only thing they had on their minds was trying to transition me into another community residence, another group home. Mm-hmm. It's just going from one institution to the next, as opposed to, you know what, like, as opposed to seeing, like, yo, your aunt is a foster parent. Duh, of course we're going to put you near her. It kind of felt like, yo, let's put him in another group home, in another institution. I'm just like, what are you guys doing right now? And I remember having to fight so hard just for the right to be with my family, right? Like, that, and to me, that stood out because I'm just like, yo, I guess freedom isn't free. Like, I can't just be my own person and just, segue into who I really want to become. Like, I have to fight for my life, you know, no one's out there backing me up. It's crazy.
Yeah. It is funny that you mentioned, when you mentioned that, it also brought me to another thought. Like, I think what helped me was meeting my mother at 16 for the first time since I was a baby, and I had no memory of her. I mean, I think I did initially, because I remember there was, my aunt told me there was one particular visit that she said I mistaked her for my mother. And they kind of look alike. So yeah, maybe then. But then after a while, I forgot what she looked like growing up. Like, by the time I was in kindergarten, I didn't know what my mother looked like.
I know you mentioned you have a brother, right?
I have two.
You have two?
Yeah.
Okay. Two brothers, no sisters?
What?
Just two brothers, no sisters?
On my father's side, I have sisters.
Okay. Like, what's
been the process? I had a sister.
Okay. What's been the process of you, like, reuniting with them? Like, what has that looked like now that you're an adult?
I'll get to that when I finish.
Okay. Okay.
But you, when you were saying, like, you know, if you knew that living with your mom, you wouldn't have been who you are today. That will also help me detach myself from, or that detach my identity from foster care as being a foster child or ward of state, that kind of thing, was also seeing my mother when I was 16. It wasn't like what you see on TV where it's like tears and, oh my God, it wasn't that. It was like, oh, wow. Nice to see where I come from. I had no expectations. I didn't know I was going to meet her. It was a surprise. I didn't have any expectations. I didn't have any reservations. It was just a, wow, okay, let's see what this is. And listening to what she had went through, and then also listening to her side of the story about what happened with us, and realizing that she was going through her own stuff too. And realizing that I had moments where I thought things about her that I thought about foster mothers I had. As far as feeling sorry for women, scorned and unhealed and not loved properly and taken care of, you know? So having some conversations with her also helped me kind of be an individual versus a ward of state, a foster child or former foster youth or at-risk youth or whatever other label that is out there for the situation. But that helped me a lot because it made me realize that sometimes parents just be, adults go through things. They go through it and they try to be the best that they can if they try. And it doesn't always work. It isn't always the best thing. You have selfish parents out here. Some parents don't even realize they're being selfish because they haven't fully grown up themselves or met every resolution or stage in their life, you know, themselves. So that helped me too, because it's like everybody goes through things. So it's not like I'm just this spectacle, you know, of a person. Everybody, people going through things. Some people who's going through worse. If I was a foster child in a third world country, I bet you I'd really be upset because they ain't got nothing. They get treated like nothing. But now on to the next question that you asked me about reunification. That has been a very interesting thing, I guess, because I wouldn't even say process, because sometimes we all get on the phone and talk. That has only happened a few times. I can count on one hand how many times my two brothers, and my biological mother has been on the phone all at once. What being in foster care and my brother being in residential care, congregate care settings growing up has done to our bond is, I want to say, irreparable. I have faith in God that he'll prove me wrong. Maybe we can repair it. But I think what hurts is not having even the desire to wanting to pick up the phone and call your brother or go and see your sister and make dates, plan vacations together, go out to dinner, like do things that siblings do, healthy siblings do. We've been in survival mode for so long that we can't even step back and say, okay, enough is enough now. It's okay. We can try to rebuild now, because we're still trying to make sure that the ground beneath us doesn't crumble at a moment's notice, because you've been, like I said, you've been on that that shaky ground for so long that you don't know that when it's okay. And I think that it's taken a detrimental effect on my family. My mother, she's just trying to make sure she maintains stable housing and a stable job. My brother, he's trying to ensure that he's raising his kids to the best of his ability, and that he's keeping things afloat. My other brother, we don't even hear from him. We don't know where he is in the world. Unless I do like some FBI research, like last time I found him, he was in California somewhere. And that's just because I got a feeling one day that I'm like, you know, I need to figure out where. I mean, we don't really have a deep bond. We did when we were younger, just because we were all struggling and going through it. He was by himself, even though he wasn't in foster care. My brother was in whatever congregate care setting they had him at. And at the time, I was in a foster home or another at the time. So we never really got time outside of an hour supervised visit to bond. And how much bonding can you really do in an hour under the supervision of a social worker?
Surface level.
There's certain things you can't talk about because you're scared. I mean, we didn't get to have individual visits until we got older and like was able to get out on our own, swipe our own Metro card and meet up with each other. But by the time that happened, it was already like he was living his life, I was living mine. And we would meet up, and sometimes it was really good. Other times it was my brother battling his demons, and we can't make the most of the visit because I have to, like, you know, try to keep me, like, I don't want to trigger him. He doesn't want to trigger me. we don't know what to talk about sometimes. And I try now to make sure that we don't always talk about the past, because that's something that I notice. Like, sometimes we get to talking about time that we just can't, we can't make up for that. But we, but moving forward, what do we want to do differently? That has been something that I have started, that I've done in conversations with my family. What do we want? I think I've started to like put that bug in their ear. Like, let's envision ourselves moving beyond this. Because if we can envision ourselves doing it, then we can begin to take the steps to do that. So I think if there's a process, we're in that part of the process. Mm-hmm. Envisioning, right? But that's hard to do when you're trying to hold on to stable housing, keep a roof over your head, keep food in your mouth, keep clothes on your back, keep a stable job, and try to save for some sort of retirement or catharsis within a few, because we have not been able to relax. Exactly. My mother has not been able to relax.
I definitely envision.
I used to envision being the one that would save the family, buy the house for everybody, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But then I also had to realize, look, you're making choices for you. They made choices for them. And I'm not trying to say, oh, well, too bad, so sad. And if when I get rich, I wouldn't know. But you have to meet people where they're at, and you can encourage them. You can bring a horse to the water, but you can't make a drink. And if somebody not trying to hear you, you got to keep it pushing. But still have love and be there if they need support. That's a part of the process too. Because sometimes the fairy tale don't always come true, right? I used to always swear that I was going to meet my mother and it was going to be beautiful and she was going to be rich. She was going to come save me.
Say that again.
She was going to come save me and be like, oh my God, daughter.
Sometimes fairy tales don't come true.
Nah, sometimes they don't. Nah. I used to always think that my family was just going to magically come back together and we were just going to start making up for lost time and it was just going to be wonderful, not realizing everybody was battling their own demons and that I would be too at some point. And then
that's important to know, because I have no I'm sure there's plenty of people that honestly feel this way, right? Like, what you just described, I'm pretty sure most people feel that way, right? Like, if I see my family, and hey, maybe sometimes it will happen, but if I see my family and it's going to be this grand fairy tale of, like, tears and
happy
and like, you guys
go to Disney World.
Everything will just be okay, right? And that's something I had to struggle with a lot too. I had to come to grips with the fact that I'm never going to have a relationship with my mom. That's just reality, right? Even when you said like you don't have the closest relationship with your brother, for me, it's more of like,
but don't get me wrong, I love my brother. That's where the complicated part is. I love my, and if anything was to happen to him, it would break my heart in 1,000 pieces. Like, I love my brother. Like, I remember being worried about him growing up, but there was nothing I could do. There was nothing I could do. And then especially when he got old enough and he started making his own choices and doing what he wanted, you know, there was nothing I can do. But it still stands, I love my brother. And just because we don't speak all the time, and sometimes I feel like I could take more initiative and invite him out on dates and stuff, but it's just like, if he's not there yet, he's just not there yet. We're not there yet.
You can't force the process.
No, you can't force the process. No, you got to respect it.
Right?
You got to trust it, too.
I want to be here with you, but you're not really there, right? So it's like...
And I can't say it's all him. It's me. Like I said, there's times where I feel like I could have, instead of hanging out with certain people and doing certain things, that I could have been meeting up with my brother, building a bond with my nephews. There did come a point where I was able to travel by myself. I could have went to go see my brother. I could have traveled to wherever he was to visit him and my nephews and stuff like that. Why didn't I at the time? Honey, that's a mystery. but it was also my choice. And if judging based on that choice, I just didn't want to. Not saying I didn't want to, as in I was mad at him. No, no, no. But I had rather done something else than do that, even though it never occurred to me that that's how what I was doing. Mm. Looking back, I wish I did take more time and really try to build a bond with my brother. But I know now that I have more control over my life. And he, you know, and I do be a little pushy with him too, because I force him. I said, look, I'm watching a lot of people pass away. People that's not even my own family. I have a grandmother. She's not my biological grandmother, but her passing felt like somebody like that I knew all my life had gone. Felt like I lost a friend. And I thought about, damn, what if I was to lose my brother? What would happen? I would regret every time that I had the opportunity to go see him, to call him, to talk to him, to build a bond with him, that I didn't. So now, instead of being abrasive and just popping up wherever he is and forcing him to talk to me on the phone all the time, I just put little bugs when we do talk. Oh. I throw little things out there. I say, look, I think at some point in the future, we should all go on a vacation together. You have kids. I love kids. I love my nephews. I think they're amazing people, little people for now. I think they're brilliant. I feel the same pride that I see other people feel about their daughters, sons, nieces, and nephews, about their next generation. I want us to have that. I want us to feel that. And he'd be like, yeah, word, word, word. Sometimes he hit me. Other times he'd be like, ice, you know. But I throw those little things out there. Like, I just throw it out there. I want him to envision that so that we can begin to start to work, do what we have to do to get there. We may not get there right now, but at some point we'll get there. And same thing with my mom. I want us to be able to have holiday dinners together.
Yeah.
You know, I want us to be able to, because I don't think that, I feel like my family, we had a lot of love for each other. I don't know how we even got to that point to where we was all jacked up. Okay, I from stuff that I heard, I could see how, but I just kind of wish we didn't, because my birth family, my biological, is dope. Like, we dope. I think it's just, I don't know. We probably gave the best of ourselves to the wrong people, and that's how the cookie crumbled. But yeah. To answer your question, long answer, yes. That's where we are in the process, envisioning where we can be, what we can do, you know, with the time that we do have now. Mm. Trying not to hold no grudges and being honest about where we are and how we feel, you know?
That's a strong start.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say it's a start. I should say it's a strong foundation. It's a strong foundation to be on. You know?
I feel like once everybody gets on good footing, then we'll be able to say, because I noticed that about my brother, my mother, and I. Everybody is like, no, let's just wait until we got this in line and that in line. And I had to snap out of it. Like, wait, hold on.
They're waiting for the right moment. They think the right moment.
You'll be waiting forever.
Well, exactly.
Realize, the right moment was umpteen years ago, it's too late. So that's what we are in the process. That's where I am in that process with it. Because I realize this is it's a dual thing. It's me with me and then me with them.
Right.
So that's where it's at in that process.
Okay. And you know what? I appreciate your authenticity and transparency in it. Because, like, I know some parts can be uncomfortable. But, like, you know, really having that reflection and really sharing, like, yo, this is difficult. I think it also sheds light for some young people right now that might be feeling like they're not to be a Debbie Downer, right? But some of them might feel like there is hope, and then, like, there can still be some form of communication, right? But it's probably not going to be their idealistic expectations, right? Like, it's not going to be that fairy tale. It might be that y'all call each other like 2-3 times a month, right? Or maybe in a week, but it's probably not going to have, just because of so much trauma, so much disconnect, so much lack of communication, these things happen. And sometimes it can be out of your control on both ends. But because of that, there's going to be that fragmentation. There's going to be that disjointedness, right? So, yeah, it's heavy.
Mm-hmm. Boy. What else are we going to talk about?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I was...
Oh, I was going to throw it
out there. I do actually want to... I do want to interrupt while we talk. So.
Okay.
Let's... You know what? Let's talk a little bit about your journey just with other foster care. Like, because even though foster care doesn't make you who you are,
mm-hmm.
it's also like you're still involved in quite a few like foster care related
mm-hmm.
Projects, right? So like mm-hmm. kind of like run me through like what those look like and like just what kind of systems do you want to see? Like what kind of systematic change do you want? All right.
Okay. So outside of my normal life in the foster care realm, I have participated in some campaigns. One campaign being Fear Futures.
Okay. Yeah. We were just talking about you on the IG Live too. That's funny.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, I think it was like 2 days ago, and what's his name? Alfonso. He said he met you in Albany. Dude with the he has like blonde hair, tall, light skinned dude.
Yeah, like a piercing in his face.
I think so.
I think I know who you're talking about. I think I know who you're talking about. I think. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I met a lot of people in Albany, so
yeah.
Sorry.
Nah, that's all like, good.
You know, when we do those type of trips, we meet kids from all over. We meet kids from different agencies, Grand Wyndham, agencies that I didn't even know of that are still up and running. facts. I thought like good Shepherd. Anywho, so I've also participated in some youth advisory boards and councils. My participation has been very like, I would say minimal. And just because like I almost feel like they're not effective, that they're just for purposes of making it look like they're incorporating the youth
you can say it.
I'm really trying not to be. Here's the thing. I don't want to be wrong. That's bad. I don't want to be wrong. I might be wrong, but I feel like they're not effective. I almost feel like they are. It's a part of a checklist or a script rather, where like okay, they have to do this to maintain a certain public perception.
Mm. Yeah, it could be that. It could be that.
Sometimes I feel like, but I really do question how much they really benefit the kids rather than the organizations themselves, or the perception of the organizations themselves, right? The public relations.
I know I'm about to put you in a pickle right here. You've seen this coming, Darren. Yo. What are some things that you would change about like youth advisory boards as a whole? Because like I know for me,
I would start with who they choose to put in the coordinator position on the agency side. So who's ever the coordinator from the agency, the internal person. Because I think that makes a big difference. I think they also need to have someone within the executive cabinet, a part of the coordination team, actively a part of the coordination team, and who will represent the youth. not the latest initiative or public relations strategy or, you know, well, you don't know, but that's the only two words that came to mind. The only two things that came to mind. I would change somebody that's within executive leadership that's actively participating to guide the children and guide the youth. Hear their concerns. I mean, they say they do hear your concerns and they try to help you draft policy and hopefully legislation to change it. But for some reason, there's some sort of disconnect. And I don't know if it's necessarily the coordinator or if it's the coordinator or it just doesn't receive as much support as it's.
I think
it does from those who really make the decisions as far as the board of directors, the executives, you know, cabinet within the agency. I don't know. If it receives,
I think there's a lot of different things that play into it.
There's a lot of moving parts, definitely. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly it, right? There's a lot of moving parts. I think for me, what I've noticed as someone who's been in youth advisory boards for a long time, definitely a lack of communication. And I'm just right. But like, I also feel like a big part of it too is that there's no. That the young people that are leading it don't have a true sense of ownership.
They don't.
Right? Like,
and I don't want to criticize them because I have not ever tried to be the leader, and I know it's probably a lot of pressure, but there's some things that I do feel like they should require from the youth. I feel like the Youth Leadership Council, number one, is something new, kind of getting off the ground. It's not even 10 years old yet. I feel like it should be educating youth about the child welfare system and about how everything relates to one another, and how it's not just the people that you see on a routine basis, the case planner, supervisor, the disbanded, no, like to see the politics of it all. Because it does have a lot to do with who is in our municipal offices. Council members, state senators, assembly members, presidents, even within, like I said earlier, I don't think they've chosen or nominated someone for the chair of the secretary for child welfare yet. Making sure that this is a priority always. But truthfully, I do see youth advisory boards that work, but not hard, really. Like,
to be fair, though, it's really hard to work hard, in a sense, when usually youth advisory boards traditionally meet up once, maybe twice a month, right? You can't really do too much in 2 hours out of a month. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard.
But also,
expectation that everyone is going to be there, that's another thing, right? So, I don't know. I think it's...
I also feel like a big part of it also feels like, as youth, though, our part is getting to know, like I said, seeking out the information. I don't think enough youth understand how these systems work. And even this is a youth council, but even if this was like a community board, if you have a bunch of members coming to these meetings that don't understand how the community board functions, they don't understand how they can leverage their advocacy and things like that, how they can really take act, then it's not going to be effective. I think not enough youth really understand how foster care functions, and so that we don't know at what parts, right, we have the opportunity to make change. So we know that change comes through policy and legislation and activism and things, but we don't really know which policies to review. Because sometimes they create new ones when all we got to do is tweak the old ones or tweak the ones that are already in place. But a lot of youth, and to be honest with you, I don't see a lot of youth that really want to know, that really care. They kind of just, they trying to, and that's normal because the Black community goes through it too, where people don't really have a desire to learn how things work, presumably work, or how this game is played. Yeah. That's and you know, everybody will say, well, then why don't you step up and why don't you do something about it? Why don't you change that? That's a tough task because you're gonna have to start challenging a lot of people's, and that's a burden. Some
it's a lot of responsibility, and I
think it's a lot of responsibility, yeah,
and especially. Not only is it a lot of responsibility, but like when people really, when push comes to shove, like a lot of people look up at you. Like I know, for instance, when I was president of the New York District Children and Youth Advisory Board, like people was like, yo, I'm coming to this because you're here. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn, okay. Like, yeah, but you want to try to ignite that individual fire in them. Like, you could do this. You like, after a while, that would really wear me down. Like,
it did wear me down. Like,
yeah, that would wear me down because like you constantly fishing and feeding people, but you got to teach them how to fish. And not everybody wants to learn how to fish. Some people enjoy being fished for and fed.
Yeah.
The hard part.
I will say though, I'll just leave it at this. I do think youth advisory boards have a lot of potential. And they can be effective, but I do think that there's those moving pieces, multiple moving pieces that make it takes a lot of maintenance to keep it floating, right? And
I think once
advisors really tap into that, and they just, hey, listen, if y'all need a consultant, I'm here. I'll make that youth advisory board great.
I'm crying. But you know what? I wonder if you really was to like really take that on full time and really, really invest in it, would you get the support from the agencies or from the organizations that you need? Because sometimes it's all okay until you really start challenging people and ruffling feathers that you get to see, like, oh, you know.
Okay.
Thank you for staying with us.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for staying with us. That might be a good idea. Tony and Derek on what children in foster care need and deserve, part two. That might be it. But real quick, I wonder if you really would get the support from the agencies. Like, you know, like you can get the support of the children and you can get, or the youth, but when you really start to gain that steam and that momentum, are you going to get the support that you need from the agencies? Genuine and really, really like real support. Because sometimes what I see in these youth advisories is that it starts to look exactly how the agencies look. People running for it for the title. And they just constantly pushing the title, but not showing the work and not doing the work.
Yeah.
I agree. It starts to become something like that. And this is a real unpopular opinion real quick, but sometimes I think that's where we have fell off in the movement for human liberation and the liberation of Black people too, because we got these groups that say, yeah, we fight, yeah, we fighting for this, but everybody's so concerned with the titles and hierarchies and positions and you know, power. It becomes more so about the title and what and the accolades than the purpose, right? And the liberation. Because essentially this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to liberate one another.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when we begin to understand that we're in a human liberation movement, it's just foster care. This is foster care. Because what we go through in foster care does not happen in a vacuum. There's three or four other institutions out there waiting for us. Jail.
Mm-hmm. Mental health.
Mental health institution. You know what I'm saying? These things do not happen in a vacuum. You got poverty, like, and even right now, I hope the people of NYCHA get together because the city is trying to privatize where they live and push them out. I hope they stick together. So it's the same.
It's not even a mm-hmm. matter of
go ahead.
When it happens. Because best belief, especially where I live, I'm in Queensbridge. Man, they can't wait to get us out. They like.
I'm saying, because you have the perfect view of the river. Look at that. The Ed Koch River. Y'all got that's prime real estate. But if the people, if the residents don't know that that's something that they about to come up against, they can't advocate for themselves. And then when you get these community boards together, hopefully they are invested in making sure that the residents are well aware of what's going on around them, i.e. when we enforce, as a youth advisory board, we need to be making sure that kids actually or youth understand what's really going on around them, then we can be effective instead of worrying about who's this and who's that and who's in charge and who's not and who could talk over the other one and who can't and who could talk down to people and who could talk kind of like all that type of behavior. I see that too much in these youth groups and it's very unattractive. People arguing, bickering, like it become like, you know, kids just be trying to bite each other heads off because it's like this is their space where they can try and gain the respect that they probably don't get nowhere else. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But when we start to really talk about stuff take all of that off, you know, get all of that out the way, we could probably make a difference. Because I feel like if we stand up, we will empower not only other children in care and liberate other children in care, that we will liberate the people who work in child welfare, who know what we go through, who empathize with us, who can relate, even though they have not gone through it themselves, who really want to make a difference and who have the same struggle getting the support from their managers. That's part of the reason why I went into child welfare as a youth counselor, as a even what I'm doing now. That's kind of why I went into, you know, how do they call it? Human services.
Right.
Because I wanted to see from another perspective, the perspective of a professional, what was happening. Because I knew what I saw happening on the receiving end of it. But now I wanted to know how it works on the giving end of it. Mm. And that's what I see.
Yeah.
That's what I see. I feel like we will liberate others, people, other professionals who are being discouraged by the support that they lack in the workplace. Or even the cultures, because a lot of the stuff that we go through, sometimes that lack of communication, a lot of kids, their cases get thrown by the wayside or they go through horrible things because people are not getting along in the job. Things is not getting done. Cases is not getting pushed through. Certain things is not being dealt with because people in the workplace can't get along. And that happens a lot in human services, more than you think.
I believe it.
It's a lot of politics in there. A lot, and I see it, and you and I now I'm not struggling, but I'm at the point where I got to choose whether or not I'm gonna be a part of it
mm-hmm.
or rise above it. And I'm damn sure gonna rise above it, and I'm not gonna be a part of it, but I still got to work there. You know what I'm saying? What I mean, but I legit watch people do a disservice all the time, not in my new program, thankfully, in my old program, and in some of my previous jobs, I watch human service professionals do a disservice every day. And they talk about stealing time as far as like not like clocking in, but not actually being at work. But no, I watch people clock in and still steal time and waste their time. Don't help the kids, provoke the kids, or don't give the kids the urgency that they deserve, or the cases, the urgency that they deserve. And I know I'm going off again, but yeah, that's something I would like. That's what I think about youth advisory boards and just organization or act or advocacy in foster care, period. Like we can do better. There's a lot of potential out there because we're a part of a network, a very powerful network, because a lot of these people that we come into are senators, they're board of directors, they're, you know, previous entrepreneurs. A lot of them are financiers, lawyers, legal advocates. Like, we have the resources. We just got to learn how to use them. And we also have to educate ourselves on what's going on, learning who's in what position and what they can do, and making them do it and challenging them to do it, and using their mission, their vision, their values and principles, not against them, but to hold them to it. That's a better
choice. Hold them accountable. That's it.
Yeah, hold them accountable for what they're supposed to be doing. Hold them to these beautiful, beautiful words that they so eloquently put together and put forth in their RFPs and stuff like that.
What are RFPs for the people?
I'm sorry, request for proposals.
There we go. All right. Yo, listen, I don't
grant requests. Make them hold them to it. But if we don't know, you know, if you didn't know Mars exists, how do you know to try and go there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I believe in us, and I believe that the youth that are coming up, I'm glad to see that they're getting it a lot better than we did. I'm glad to see.
As should be the, because like, you know,
as far as paying for our schooling, paying for us to get passports, our driver's license, permits, and just like just paying for, if you want to become a real estate agent, they could pay for that and all of that. As far as that, wonderful. I'm glad to see they're getting, because there's a lot of kids 10, 20 years ago that could have benefited from that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to take the hard way out. So shout out to them for doing better with that. And I hope they hurry up and rewrite this policy for ETD so I could get some help paying for this grad program. Cause did you hear about that?
Yeah.
How they extended it to 26, but New York has to do their own separate sort of, I guess they have to come to their own stipulation agreement. They need to hurry up though, cause my tuition got to get paid.
Oh, they can't come any faster.
I've been paying out of pocket. This stuff is hard, man. This stuff is hard. Took it for granted, undergrad.
Yo, I appreciate you for coming out. I don't even know how to follow up because it's just so much she put into the just her heart and soul into this. And like, I really hope a lot of people who are watching the replay really take into account what she's saying. And like, I really feel like there's a lot of hidden gems in here. And yo, Dareth is one of those people that, I mean, I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing your email or anything like that so people can get in contact with you, but I think there definitely might be some people that want to connect with you after.
Well, you can always email me. I don't know if you can they see my name?
Yeah.
Like, does it look like how yours look when it says Tony the Realist with the blue?
Oh, I wonder if I put out the display name. I could always get your name out in there though. That's no problem.
Okay. So my email will be my last name, first name. @gmail.com. I am on, you see, I don't really use my social media for this.
Let's see. You don't have to.
You can add me on Snapchat.
Okay.
Snapchat is just my name. It's just my name _. Let me see. I could hold up my
name. Put it in the comments.
I could do that? Where's oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Just throw it in there.
You guys.
She's going in and out again.
I'm not.
Wait, Darren, you're going in and out again.
I don't know how anything looks.
What in the world?
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you, but I can't tell. I don't know what that was just now. Yo, Darren. Your Wi-Fi is crazy.
Crazy, yo. Yo, I'm about to go on.
I saw like a light beam or something. I'm like, what's going on here?
Darn.
Yeah, Darius Wi-Fi, the optimal.
I'm embarrassed.
Oh, is it?
Embarrassed. That's my Snapchat. Just in case you don't see this, this is my Snap code. I can't see that. Hold on, let me try to. Nope, can't see that. Mm-mm. Never mind. Maybe. Oh, you know what? Let me turn down the brightness on my phone. Maybe you can see it better there. Oh yeah, there you go. That's how it's spelled.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. They swear when you're young, you know everything. Listen, I'm not one of those young people. I'm still learning.
Listen.
And yo, Tony, again, thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
Yo, it's a pleasure. Like, I know we talked about like a million things today, but I appreciate you just rocking out, just sharing your story. And like, I'm just glad I was able to have a platform where you can like really just speak your truth. As opposed to having to hide and, you know, not be able to say it. These are the kinds of conversations that I wish I heard about when I was younger. Yeah. And that's the reason why I decided to make this podcast. Because I didn't know. No one told me about this. I'm hoping that once the agencies get on board and they share this with the youth, then they can know. That's when I know my job is done.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. Yo, it's your boy Tony Derillis. Keep hope alive.
And I look forward to our future talks.
Yes. Yo, I want to have you on for more specific topics though. Like, we'll talk offline. We'll talk offline and then we'll have our stuff. But appreciate y'all for coming in. And we
want to stay okay.
Keep hope alive. Until next time. And then